Hello,
Hey,
everyone.
Michelle.
Welcome. Hey, Dallin. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Welcome, everyone, to episode 4 of Money and Skills with Dallin and Michelle. Thanks so much for joining us or catching the replay, whichever is happening for you at this time. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening in to what we're chatting about in regards to money and skills. So this episode, episode 4, we're talking about being a subject matter expert, how to monetize it, how to develop in your skills with that, and just moving forward with that. So yeah.
Let's do it. You know, it's Black TD with Michelle Beatty PMP. That's all I've got so far. I'm working on the rest of the bars. I'll get it for next episode. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So one thing about being a subject matter expert, I like to tie it in with the Keep Your Stride narrative that we've been having the last 3 episodes, where I break down my stride narrative, which is stats, teachable, research, intentionality, development, and engagement. So tonight, which is a great alignment with being a SME, is research. So when keeping your stride, I want to really reiterate when it comes to research is that we're constantly not only researching what's going on in our industries, but also researching ourselves and our paths of how we've navigated different things in regards to where we need to develop and where we need to be more confident and share expertise, or where we just need to say, okay, this is our sweet spot when it comes to how we are in our industries. And the great thing about it is SMEs can be found in a variety of industries. So just to name a few, we know human resources, law, accounting, public relations, marketing, health, just a whole array. You can find a SME. And the great thing about SMEs is that they are needed by so many people, right? So for me as a project manager, you need your SME to tell you about the details of a certain process that you might be familiar with as you're going through the different processes of executing your project. So your SMEs can help you not only give you solutions, but they can also give you direction. So find power in what you bring to the table as a SME.
One question I want to throw out there, if you're going to address this later on, you know, feel free to just completely ignore me. Is there, or what is the difference between just being good at your job or just knowing your stuff and being an actual subject matter expert? Because I feel like somebody's out there listening to this saying, yeah, I've been doing this for whatever 10 years. I know what I'm doing. I've gotten promoted so many times. I'm the manager at this place. So I'm the insert long LinkedIn title here of this company. Like what is there, or what is the difference between just knowing how to do it very well and being the subject matter expert? You don't have to address this right now, but I think there's somebody out there who's probably thinking that besides me.
Well, no, I found this awesome article on Indeed where they break that down, right? So a subject matter expert is an individual with a deep understanding of a particular job, process, department, function, technology, machine, material, or a type of equipment. So for example, if you work in a grocery store, a SME can be someone in produce. A SME can be someone for deli, bakery. They know that area. They know it very well. It's just one entity of what that looks like, but it's zoning in on one specific area.
Okay.
So go ahead.
No, so it's very niche, in other words.
It is very niche. And like, just to like expound upon what you were sharing and asking in regards to someone that's been in the role for 10 years, they might not have a specific area that they focus on. So they work their role. Doesn't mean that they're a trainer of their role. They're just a worker.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
That part. So we have our SMEs. And so one thing that I wanted to talk about are like, what are the duties? So you analyze the community activities to ensure resources are used efficiently. You support leadership. You make recommendations for infrastructure, software, things of that nature. How do you become a SME, or how do you even recognize you're a SME? I feel it's like almost like when someone realizes that they're a project manager, but they don't need the certification. It's like that aha moment when you realize, okay, I'm a project manager and I don't need the certification to be a project manager. Like, what does that look like? So right. I feel like when you're identifying that you're a SME, I feel like you kind of go through that same process, like, well, give me the checklist. Let me see what that is. So one thing could be gain knowledge on the subject, right? So yep. How knowledgeable are you on the subject? And just like you're, you know, asking earlier, if someone's been in a role for 5-10 years, you know that role, right? You most right. likely every quarter there's another something different, or every season brings up something. Just there's cadences to how the business operates and how your yep. role contributes, as we've been talking the past 3 episodes, to the money line. So what does that look like in regards to the knowledge that you bring to the table when it comes to being a SME? Gotcha. Do you consider yourself a SME, Dallin?
Depends on what it is. I think some things, like you're saying, are just the role, where there's something you just know how to do because you're doing your general role. And then there's some things that where you'd be the subject matter expert. For example, in my office, I won't get in trouble for talking about this. In my office, for example, I ended up being the SME, so to speak, on doing investment funds in the Caribbean, specifically in the British Virgin Islands. Why? Obviously, I'm from the British Virgin Islands. I used to audit these companies before. I'm familiar with the regulator and a lot of the regulations. And then on top of that, I had to actually spend the time after launching a couple of them, just in the trenches, learning about it myself. So you end up being the kind of go-to person for that stuff. It's a technical, weird little, again, it's super niche. You know, this is like, I mean, a lot of people out there probably know more in general about investment funds, but when it comes to the little weird idiosyncrasies, who you need to call, what do you need to do to get it done in this particular way, in this jurisdiction, in this type of fund, like you seem to be just getting narrower and narrower. Yeah, I'll probably be the SME for that specific thing.
No, I totally get it. And like, if someone's also thinking about what they are a subject matter expert for, AKA SME, what do you find yourself talking the most about? Like, if you're talking about how to manage your social media, or someone's always asking you, you can figure out what are questions that someone's always asking me specifically at work, or like, hey, go to Dallin, hey, go to Michelle, like, what is that? Go to Kim, whoever, yep. Go to that person and find out what that is. So what do you get asked a lot of questions for? I know for me, one thing that I feel like I'm growing is like social media, right? People constantly ask me that. I get questions about career stuff, right? But I also get a lot of questions about branding. So
okay,
I'm evolving SME when it comes to that.
All right, there you go. I think you're on the SME continuum.
But I think as you journey through identifying whether you're a SME, you realize there's levels, like there's categories, like you really realize the breadth of what that could be. And then, like you said, what is your niche and how do you define it? Because you might be like, my thing could be, like you were saying, like they came to you for something specific.
Yeah.
You realize as you figure out your industry and what makes you the subject matter expert, you question yourself. Like, I always encourage people to remember, I'm like, this could be a very unnerving experience going through this process of determining whether or not you're a SME, because it's like, you really question, what do you know? What do you need to learn? What do you enjoy doing, right? And you got to make sure you want to talk about it forever in a day, because you're going to be that person for a little bit, at least a while.
I think one interesting thing that happens, at least in my experience, people will start seeing you as the subject matter expert before you see yourself as a subject matter expert. Like it sneaks up on you. Like you get, I don't know, it's not a voluntary, like, oh, sometimes at least, it's not, I'm going to be the expert on this. You just realize, where I realized it was, we did one of these investment funds and we had to do it from zero, from the ground up, from idea straight up to all the legal stuff, all the regulations, all the stuff. We launched it full, started growing it to, you know, millions of dollars and everything. And then out of the blue, it's like a year after that, they decided they want to do another one of these things. And I just got an email from the CEO of the bank. I mean, it's not weird to get an email from, but like a specific, just get copied on this email, like, hey, so-and-so wants to do one of those things. He needs to talk to you. Walk him through it. That's when you realize, you see the email at first, you're like, oh, you don't talk to me. Why are you talking to me? I don't know. Then you realize they're looking at it like, no, you do know. Like, as far as everybody else here, you know more than the rest of us about this specific little thing. And none of us care to spend the time digging into all the weeds like you've already done. So go. And you just kind of get donned as subject matter expert for this thing. So yeah, look out for what people are doing and what they're seeing in you before you even see yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's a journey. And so being on that journey, it definitely requires you to, you know, to find ways to educate yourself. So reading industry periodicals, going to conferences right now, you know, virtual, in-person, whichever fits your comfort level, certifications, or just actually spending time reviewing the existing SOP, standard operating procedures that exist within the organization, and doing comparisons with your competitors or with sister companies or whichever exists for your industry. What does that look like? So right. I think that that's like really key. And then what we were talking about briefly, which was how do you determine that? So you got to test it. You got to test your knowledge. And what does that look like? I know for me, it's a constantly, how well can you explain the process? And can you teach it to someone else? And can they do it effectively after they've done that? So one, you can write it out and it makes sense to you, but yeah. Can you teach it? Can you teach it to someone else for them to be able to repeat the process? I think there's the essence of it.
Yeah, and I think people need to realize how big being the subject matter expert on what seems like a super niche thing, it can have a major global impact. And I'll give the example. There's a Trinidad? Yeah, she's from Trinidad. I think she's from Trinidad. I'm like 99% sure on this. 99% sure she's from Trinidad. Marla Dukaran. She's a Trinidadian economist. And she focuses, obviously she understands the global economy, all this kind of stuff. And she's very skilled, very intelligent. She understands all this stuff. But when she writes, she publishes herself and her research, it's specifically on the Caribbean region. She could write about, you know, geopolitics and this and that and other and how it impacts the economy and what the Federal Reserve, it's all related, you know, the world is connected. But when she publishes stuff, she got known for being the go-to person for what the heck is going on in the Caribbean, what does this mean? And it's to the point where she's so respected as a subject matter expert on this thing that depending on what she publishes in her monthly blog, her monthly newsletter, interest rates will change because of what she said. It's that serious. Like she put out an article last year specifically about, it was one of her monthly newsletters, just giving her prognosis on what's happening in the Bahamas and the amount of debt to GDP ratio and all this kind of stuff. Investors started freaking out. When I say investors, I don't just mean like Caribbean investors. I'm talking about, you know, Wall Street was paying attention to a little lady in and I don't mean this in a demeaning way. I just mean little in terms of like when you look at the scope of what you could do just by being the quote unquote little subject matter expert. Wall Street is paying attention to what this lady is saying because they're like, hey, we're up here in New York, we're doing this and the other, but she seems to be really close to what's happening on the ground. So if she's thinking this, maybe we need to start making some adjustments. And you saw the price of the, like, you can look physically on the screen when this thing dropped and see the price falling because the subject matter expert just said something about it. And when she changed her mind or when she gives some different perspectives on something else, you see the price of things physically change. So she can move markets just by being the subject matter expert on what seems to be something that's niche and irrelevant in the global scale.
I love it. And that just says to me, do not shy away from your power. Do not shy away from sharing your voice. And I know that we've been sharing that throughout the season, like share your knowledge, share your expertise. And I think that's so important. So as a SME, just like you can be a trailblazer and setting trends and impacting trends and what people do, make sure when you're doing your research and you're testing everything, you document it along the way. You document everything, every theory that you think you should have used, everything that you feel like didn't work or didn't work, the philosophies that impact it. Why did you think this way? And I encourage people to not think as if they're sharing too much or they need to keep it close to the chest. Maybe you do to a degree, but at the same time, it's like you're reinforcing your expertise, but at the same time, you're also implementing processes, implementing protocols, as you just shared, like setting standards, right, for what people should or should not do and how they should look at things. You're giving multiple perspectives to analysis, to do an analysis for different aspects of business, of how it impacts customer service, or whatever your demographic is, or whatever your focus area is. So I love that you shared that. Thank you.
She's on LinkedIn too, by the way. She's active out here. So check her out, Marla Dukaran. I'll jump in the comments after this and tag her. Big up to you, Marla. Thanks for all the work you do. Awesome.
So how I think also a thing that's really good for SMEs is them being able to trust themselves, trust that they know.
Yeah.
I think it's super easy sometimes, depending upon the situation, for someone to question what they know based off how questions are coming at them, or some people just love to challenge, right? You can say something's red and like, oh no, it's maroon. It just, everyone's different, right? So it's like,
yeah, we've seen that during the last 2 years. Trust me.
Indeed. So it's like, okay, I just want to encourage anyone that's determining their path as a SME, be it how they share their voice. Trust yourself, trust your expertise, trust the years of experience that you have used to acquire your skill set and to define it and to really become a leader with that. Trust yourself. I know different people have different opinions about the imposter syndrome right now, but at the end of the day, that's what most people know it as, imposter syndrome, which is associated with doubt and fear. So what does that look like? And so know what your triggers are, find out. And I think when you're RSME, one thing that really is helpful is know what triggers you to doubt yourself. And that way you can work on strengthening that within yourself, and that therefore your confidence comes through. And if someone questions you, you can not necessarily dismiss it, but you can answer it in a way, because you always want to be respectful in your communication, but answer in a way that fortifies what you know.
Right. And I think a part of it, because when I'm listening to you, part of what starts rolling up in my brain is this idea that if you raise your hand and put yourself out there as the SME, the subject matter expert for whatever it is there room for error? Is there room for you to not know something? Is there room for you to not be perfect? And the way I tend to spin it around is, you're not saying, when you say you're the expert in something, you're not necessarily saying that you know every single thing. What I'm saying is, in this room, I am the most committed to putting in the most work to continuously keep on learning about this thing. Like, there's nobody who's doing more reading. I may not have read everything yet, but I'm pushing to make sure nobody's doing more continuous reading about it, more research on it, more continuous, like looking into it and trying to understand the new trends. So I think that's where you give yourself the little bit of grace in that I'm building the most capacity to understand this area. You know, I'm constantly immersed in it. I don't know everything, but if anybody's going to figure it out, it's probably going to be me first. That's the kind of way I think about the SME, more than just, oh, I'm the expert. I know how to do every single thing, especially when you talk about tech spaces or things that are continuously changing.
No, and that's true. And one thing, if you're a SME in the making or you're a SME, one thing I always tell people, and when they're encourage people to do when they're sharing their expertise or clarifying their expertise or just clarifying their point, I'm like, tell the story. Leave no room for assumption. Leave no room for someone like needing additional clarification. If it is clarification, it's not clarification on what you just shared with them, right? It's the next level to another level to what they're asking. Because if you tell the story and not say, oh, go through like an email or per my last email or whatever your vernacular is, that's fine. But make sure that when you tell the story, you cover every basis of it from A to Z of what they need. And it doesn't have to be this long detailed email, this long, like, you know, you turn into a monologue, but you have your key points, which ends up being checkpoints, right? Because you're able, someone says, why is that? You can say, well, based off of this, based off my experience, based off of what I researched, based off of me attending this class. Like, you want people to literally walk away or in their cell phone, like, what did they say? Like, I need to research this topic or whatever, because it's a good thing if you create curiosity. I believe that SMEs create curiosity, right? You can create curiosity to learn, you create curiosity to make things better, but it also curiosity to make sure that it's brand, right? And what does that look like? And what what are the elements behind that? I get a little hype.
I like it. I was just there like if this is one of those church moments, you know, that's where that's what that would show up on the screen. Shmi's create, the Holy Spirit just dropped this into my spirit.
Ugh. Oh my goodness!
But well, yeah, I agree with what you're saying though. I mean, I've seen situations where you think something is totally boring and just obnoxious or whatever it is, but then by the time you're done having a 15-minute conversation with the Shmi, you're like, man, this person's really into this. It actually is kind of cool. You know, when people, for example, I'm a geek about cables and microphones. It's the point my you know, you've been around me with the weird conversations. Well, you know, I mean, obviously, look around here. It's one of those things where the stuff is just fascinating. It's something that would seem extremely boring to somebody else. I will dig into it. Like, you know, I tend to always have at least one microphone on me somewhere on my person. Like I could be walking to the grocery store. There's a little mic in my pocket or in a bag somewhere or in the car, like just in case, you know, I need to have better audio.
Are you gonna do an impromptu like podcast interview?
I mean, you never know. You know, I got a lavalier mic in a pocket just in case we need to whip out and do something. You never know. You just never know.
All right. One thing I do also want to share when it comes to being a SME is be genuine, right? Genuine, be sincere. You want to make yourself approachable instead of being lofty or just like someone's like, well, okay, that's great. Like right now, we're just all in the space of helping people, helping each other. This is like team on a whole nother level, just in regards to different work environments. So be genuine. And when you're sharing your information, and I would say, just make sure that you're also approachable when you're sharing your information, because you want people, that's the whole point of like working with me. You want people to want to interact with you. You want people to ask questions. If not, then it counteracts what you're trying to do and share your expertise, unless like you're in a silo situation and that's what you're supposed to do. But if you're in a team environment, you want people to ask you questions. You want people to feel comfortable asking you maybe the same question until they get it. Because one thing is when you're sharing a process or teaching a process or reiterating a process or however you want to look at it, it's going to take repetition, right? So what does that look like? And sometimes you're saying the same thing five different ways, but it's still the same things. Are you patient, right? Are you patient with that? Sometimes you need to be patient with yourself. It's not necessarily the people that you're working with, but be patient with yourself. Yeah. So, and also be okay with knowing that the aha moments are coming. And like you were saying earlier, what does that mean for people that, you know, it's like, if you don't know the answer, well, we're human. We don't know everything. Like we're always running to someone that doesn't know us, and something's always stretching us to be better. So what does that look like? So if you're a SME, if you're trying to determine if you're a SME, I want you to write down three topics. Let's not make this an extensive list, right? Write down three things that you find yourself talking about the most that you are extremely knowledgeable about, and that excites you, right? Professionally or personally, but since this is professional, we focus on monies and skills. Let's talk about like from a professional standpoint, what is something that just totally excites you, like down in the microphones and all that kind of stuff? For me, it's almost anything project management. Like particularly for me, it's processes. I'm really into processes, how things connect, how do they work, what's the missing link, all that kind of stuff. And then I want you to really calculate your years, right? Your years of how long you've done this, how long it was interested you. And then I want you to break it down into categories. If there's categories to it, break it down and then really figure out, like Dallin was saying earlier, your niche. Like, what is your niche? Like, there's no need to be broad when you're the SME. You can be as detailed as possible. So what is that? So you're going to figure out what excites you, three things. Then you're going to break that down even further into categories of what is related to that. Like what's all the things that are connected to that. And then I want you to challenge yourself and like someone that knows nothing about what you do, can you eloquently explain it to them? And then they can explain it back to you in a teacher student format.
Makes sense. Yeah, I mean, I've interacted with some SMEs before. And I think part of the setup to being a good SME is has something to do with has less to do with the actual information or the technical side of it, but your personality. For example, there's one person I know who I've worked with where two people I can think of, they just have a kind of very teaching personality. They can correct you. They know how to do it where you don't feel belittled. Right, you actually want to go to them like, can you just correct me? I prefer for you to correct me than for me to really mess this up and get embarrassed somewhere else. Can you just ruin me right now? Just help, just get me straight. Like, help me figure it out real quick. And I've worked with two of those people, and they actually send very long emails, both of them. But you appreciate it because when they send the email, it's almost like a user manual. It's a guide. Like, I will reference, I will flag star whatever that email and go back to it, print it out, highlight, like, hey, thank you so much for sending this ridiculously long email. That way I don't have to come back and harass you. I can walk through the process. So I think, yeah, that kind of stuff I think is crucial for the SMEs and I love saying that word, SME. The SMEs and the aspiring SMEs out there.
For sure. So how can we monetize it, Darren?
Well, this is where I get to the crux of this stuff. The building your expertise and all that kind of stuff is great. And you know where my whole mindset is right now. Let's milk it for all it's worth. And you know, having the expertise and becoming a subject matter expert is great for your roles, great for that company, that kind of stuff. But we can't get in the point where, as I've said on previous episodes, where we're just held hostage by this one income stream or this one paycheck. How can you leverage that expertise that you've built up or that reputation as a subject matter expert and get paid for it outside of your main client or your main job, that one place? So what I want to share tonight is just walking us through a couple of different things we need to start doing to make sure we're getting the most out of all the work we're putting in to become experts on different topics and things that we don't even realize that we're experts on. So What I want to walk through is a little framework here, about 7 or 8 steps. We'll walk through it really quick on how we can start doing this and doing this in a more responsible kind of way. And I'll put this out here at the top. This is kind of what we're talking about right now in my community. So if you want to get more details, steps on this and links and, you know, little resources to make this happen, you can go over to dallinv.com or dallinvanderpool.com/join and drop your first name and email in there, and you start getting the resources with the rest of the crew so you can see how we're making this happen, how we're building up the expertise, but also learning how to monetize them, right? So let's walk through a couple of the things that we need to start thinking about when you decide, hey, I want to make more money out of the stuff that's going on in my head or out of the skills. So for me, I've gotten to a point, for better or for worse, in my career where it backfires sometimes, where I don't have much interest in learning things that are not going to benefit me long term. It's just very hard for me to learn little things that are, it's very hard for me to sit down and learn things that are just very company specific. Like, if I leave this job tomorrow, this skill that you want me to spend forever mastering is completely useless. Like, I mean, those things are out there, you know, companies have systems and that kind of stuff, but it's very frustrating for me. It's like pulling teeth. Like, I can't use this anywhere else. I don't want to spend this much time doing this. Hello. Let me do something that I can use long-term. That's portable, that I can take somewhere else. Let me focus on those things. So this is what we want to kind of start. Yeah, go for it.
Are you referring to like a customized CRM for that business or?
Yeah, it could be customized CRM stuff. I'm always trying to look at it like, okay, if this is the particular little mini system that you want me to learn, what is the bigger takeaway I can take from this? Am I learning I need to find some way to make it portable for it to be valuable in my head. So if I'm going to learn this particular CRM, I need to look at it as I'm learning CRM systems so that when I go somewhere else, I can evaluate what makes a good one, what makes a bad one, what are the deficiencies. You know, I just need to make it bigger than just what you need to click in this little button here to make this other thing do. It's just one of those things. You get to that point where you start thinking about monetizing stuff. And it's not that I don't mind learning it, but I just don't want to put the lion's share of my time into learning things that are not like wider reaching and portable. Right.
No.
If it's industry specific, I can get it. All right, I'm down with that. If this is something that's within the industry, if you're in the financial industry and you need to learn how to use Bloomberg or something from BlackRock or Aladdin, great, all for it. If this is something that we're not going to use after we leave this room, I'm like, you know, get somebody for $500 a month to just sit down and just, I don't have the time, you know, just do something else. Okay. Anyway.
Well, I think that a lot of people, generally speaking, can, that whole experience of why am I doing this, especially if you're frustrated or you're burnt out in your job or you're just going through a few changes. I think that one thing can help from a mindset perspective is look for the transferable skills when you're in a situation where you have to learn something that you're not sure if it's going to serve you well long term. Well, are you really adding to a transferable skill that can suit you long term?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the way to kind of approach a lot of this stuff. So when you make the decision or when you're about to decide, okay, look, I want to start diversifying my income. I want to do something else. And remember the backdrop to all of this is I'm never the one saying, or for now, at least I'm not the one saying that you have to quit your job or you need to go out and become an entrepreneur tomorrow. That's not the case. But you want to be in a position where you can, right? You want to be in a position where you're at that job because you want to be doing that, not because if something happens to the company tomorrow, you're going to be homeless and poor and broke. You want to be in a position where you can, and you can decide whether you want to or not, right? This is all about having the autonomy. You want to have the options around here. Who wrote that song? I think it was Skip Marley or Ziggy Marley and Pitbull. I got options. Play the track, Michelle. You don't got the track? We'll drop it.
I don't have a track.
You don't have the track? All right, we get it together. I will drop it in the show notes or the comments. I got options.
I will put it in the show notes for sure.
Let's go. I'll drop you the link to it. I got options. So this is what we're talking about when we're talking about building up these options. So first thing I think that people need to do is decide what you really want to accomplish. And I think this first step is where people get tripped up. And I say decide, you want to set a realistic, meaningful, high-definition goal. And I'll break that down. When I say high-definition goal, meaningful and realistic, you want to have deep meaning to what you're doing. If it's just like, oh, I'm just bored, that's not gonna sustain you through what it takes, the amount of effort it takes to do work after work. Right. If you just have a casual, you need something a little bit deeper. You need a deeper why than just, I just feel stuck. Yeah, that's not gonna make you, you know, deal with family, deal with kids, and then clock in again at 9 p.m. to do something. That's you need something more than that, right? So you want to decide what it is you're trying to do. Get that real reason. You gotta peg it to something. I found that pegging it, I talk about this in my book. If you peg it to something external, a lot of times, it'll give you the drive to do it even when you don't feel like doing it. So think about what is this going to do for my family, for my community, for, you know, what I'm trying to do long term. Like you got to have it a little bit deeper. But I think even on a numerical standpoint, what is it you're trying to do? Do you want to and none of these are the wrong answer, by the way. You just got to be realistic and clear about what you're doing. Do you want to make a little bit of money to pay a couple bills? Do you want to make a little side money so that you can cover your vacation because you got a trip you want to take? Are you trying to match that your actual salary income and then keep going, or are you trying to match it and then potentially leave and scale and do something else? Just decide from day one, and you can change this as it goes along, but make a decision at that point what it is you're realistically really trying to do, and then actually set a dollar amount to it. You know, I don't like things like I want to make some extra money. How do you write extra in numbers? Like, I'm a banker, I don't understand what extra is. Like, no, I just want some little side cash. Like, how much money is side cash for you? Because I know some people whose side cash is $100,000. Like, what are you talking about? Be specific. Like, how much money do you actually want to make? So set that dollar amount. How much money do you want to make? And how much money do you have to make? Like, what would have to be true for this work that you're doing to be worth your time? Right? Because there's a lot of things you could do to make money. But is it really worth your time?
I agree. So can we do an avatar about it just by what you just said? Let's talk about copywriting, like someone, if they are a copywriter. Yeah. So they would go through a discovery stage, right? Of what aspects of copywriting they would like. Are they going to do case studies or social media or, you know, whatever that is, right? Writing social one thing that's really needed for a lot of people right now is newsletters, right? So figure out what that means and how do you break that down. But one thing, like I agree with everything that you said, but another thing in regards to what do you see yourself doing after you've worked your 9-to-5 or your primary gig. So if since we're using copywriting as our example for the conversation, what aspects of copywriting do you like? To Dallin's point, figure out your price point. So where would you go? I know like earlier in the season, we shared different resources, like not TaskRabbit, but what is one of the ones we shared? Yeah, thank you. Upwork. I'm like, now I'm having like a fog moment, but Upwork, for example, or even Fiverr, but Upwork will probably be more in line potentially, right? So what does that look like? These are just suggested resources. They're not the mandatory go-to, but just other places to check to see what other people are saying. So what Dallin is sharing is great, because then you can figure out, well, people's rates are there and how long they commit to different projects, and figuring out the timeline that works with you. So breaking it down. So did we cover everything? Like figure out your rates to comparison, what aspects of copywriting, for example, purposes you're into, and then also what is the commitment of time and what would your ramp up time be? Did I hit all your points?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's
exactly what you're copywriting.
Yeah. That's a good example of how you want to start. You start thinking about this stuff. Once you've decided on the what it is you want to do, or the in terms of how much money you want to make and that kind of stuff, I think there's a period that people skip over as well, especially if you've been in a traditional job for a long time. The part of your brain that talks about, you know, being entrepreneurial or freelancing or creating value from your own, you know, going from what's in your brain to money, it can atrophy after some time, because you get conditioned into thinking that you can only add value to the market within the construct of this other organization. I need to go to somebody else who's already built something, and then go, like, you forget that you can go from brain to client. Like, you don't believe that you can actually do that anymore. You don't believe that you can actually create the same systems or structures or whatever it is to where people want to actually pay you directly for what you have in your head or what you do with your hands or whatever it is. So you got to spend some time really flushing out that employee program and go for it.
The question is, where do you suggest them be their starting point for their system that you just mentioned? Because I think that's a phenomenal point.
Starting point,
determining what their system is, right?
Okay, in terms of what they're going to do. Okay, got you. So this is flows right into the next point. So you want to take inventory, right? You want to take inventory. I think this is the starting point. You take inventory of your skills. And it kind of goes to the next couple of points here. You take an inventory of your skills, because the side business, and I'm trying to stray away from the term side hustle, right? Or hobby. It's not, you got to decide what you're doing here. Is this a hobby that you're doing for your own mental health and you want to feel better? Or are you trying to actually do another business to make some money? That's a crucial thing to figure out at the beginning. But you want to take an inventory of your skills and interests. And I say skills and interests because it could be that you have the skill already, right? That you want to say, okay, I want to monetize the same stuff that I've become a subject matter expert in before. And I want to monetize that more. I want to go deeper. I want to spread that out. Or maybe at work, you're in this niche and outside you want to stay in the same playground, but you want to go into another niche. Maybe it's something you can't do at work, but you really want to go down this rabbit hole on the side. Maybe you want to do that as well. So you could say something that's your skills, or it might be something that you have an interest in that you're willing to develop the skill in. Right? You don't really have the skills just yet. Maybe it's coding, maybe it's whatever it is, but you're willing to do the work and learn fast. So you're willing to go in for 6 months hard on this thing. You're not going to become the expert on it in 6 months, but you're willing to hit it hard at the top and then commit the rest of the time to mastering it, right? You want to get to a certain level of proficiency really quick and then continue mastering it over time. So I think that's the next step, taking that inventory to see, and this is all getting to what it is you want to do. You haven't fully decided exactly which path you're going down. Another thing that I think about, this is kind of what goes to your point earlier that you were saying, like, what will you really feel able to do willing to do after work, after your main gig, is mapping out the logistics. Like, where are you actually going to do this? Where are you going to find the time or make the time? For example, in my case, I had to literally sit down and look at all the things that I mandatorily have to do between work and family and this and that. And how many hours I need. I talked to a doctor, like, what's the minimum number of hours I need to be healthy sleeping and this and that other. We came up with this thing, like, look, you have, if you were to sleep, eat, do family, whatever it is, and still be a proper functioning human being, besides, between all that stuff, 24 hours a day, you have a 3-hour window per day where you could possibly do something else. So I got to maximize those 3 hours, and whether, and you put those 3 hours in. So between nine and it's nine to midnight, or you know, whatever it is you're setting up, you got to find, map out your logistics as far as where you're going to make that time to execute. On a technical side as well, I remember one time I was working from an accounting firm, and I was like, this is okay. So we do accounting. I can become a QuickBooks expert, and then people can pay me to help set up the QuickBooks, blah, 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 blah. I was ready to go, about to become QuickBooks certified, this and that, the other. And then somebody nudged me like, hey, you know, they got a non-compete clause here. So we do that kind of stuff in the office. There's a department. It's not your department, but there's a department that does that. So they're going to have issues if you go out and do it yourself. I was like, see? So you want to think about that kind of stuff as well. If you're trying to monetize the expertise that you use and your main client, your main day-to-day job, I think, are there any non-compete clauses or little, can you publish things? Just have a conversation with HR maybe, or read the employee manual really closely. Just make sure there's no technical issues from there. Also think about the logistics in terms of where you're going to do this. Is it something, I mean, if it's just something you need your laptop to do and you can do it at home, or are you Etsying it and you need a space in your garage, or like me, like right now, I had to bust out a wall between two closets to make a little office here to do stuff. So where are you actually going to do this? And then I think the most crucial point here, the when you start making the hard decisions, is choosing a path. Like, what is it that you're going to do? Are you trying to sell a product, like a physical product? Are you trying to provide a service? Or are you, maybe you have some money saved up and you want to go the route of actually being an overseer, right? So you're an investor. You're not just trying to be a business owner, but you want to buy a business, right? And Cody Sanchez talks a lot about this. I mentioned to you earlier this week, we were talking about some stuff. Do you want to go the route where you have your main job and you're willing to buy not just any kind of business, you're buying a business that doesn't necessarily require a lot of manpower or of your actual attention, person power. You don't need that actual dedication of your time, or does the business have enough meat in it? Is there enough profit, enough juice in it to where you can hire someone else who's really qualified to be the operator, right? The thing that you would think you need to go and do, does the business have enough leeway in there money-wise to where you can hire somebody else to do that? So you are you see yourself more as chairman of the board versus the CEO who's there the day-to-day, right? Is that something you can do? And that's an interesting way to do it as well, where you still get the fulfillment of quote-unquote running a business, but you don't have to do the day-to-day running of the business because you spent the money to get somebody else who can do it really, really well. So choose that path. Decide if you're going solo, if you're doing it yourself, or if you're buying into an existing business. And I want to make that clear distinction. You can buy the business or start the business, or you might see something else where you can be a silent partner. And this can be your additional income stream. Maybe they just need the money. Maybe they just need certain connections that you have, or maybe they just need your expertise on the board of directors. And this can be an additional income stream. I know some people who literally just sit on boards, collecting $10,000 a month, just sitting on boards. This is what they do. They became well-known in the industry for whatever it is, and they just go around just meeting on Zoom for 30 minutes at a time twice a week and collecting thousands of dollars. So maybe that's something you could think about doing as well. Maybe you want to lend your expertise in that direction. The other thing I like to do is setting trigger points, right? So you're going along the path and you want to set trigger points for if this, then that, right? You want to kind of start programming it. Like, okay, you need to decide for early, if you're making $5,000 a month, you need to decide from early, like what happens when you generate $2,500? So now you consistently, you're able to hit half your income. Are you comfortable with that? And again, there's no wrong answers here. Maybe you're cool with the extra $2,500, or are you the person who says, man, I'm only putting in 2-3 hours on the weekends on the weekdays at night, and I put in like 4 hours on the weekend. If I had the extra 8 hours that I'm putting into my regular job to put into this, I could make 10,000. Are you that person who's going to try to match? Are you the person who's going to try to ditch the day job and then go full on into it? You want to set those trigger points so when it comes, you're not caught off guard. You know what it is you're actually working to do. Do you want both incomes, or are you trying to have one completely overload the other one so you can go in that direction? So think about those trigger points from early. And then the last two, look, move like a business. I've seen so many people talking about they're doing a side hustle or whatever it is. It's a hobby. You're not doing a side hustle or side business. You have a hobby that you're hoping works out to make some money. But if you approach it like a hobby, people are going to approach you like a hobby. I remember at some point when I was doing music for a long time, professional musician, and we had to switch over from treating this thing like a cool hobby, or you go to the office during the day and you're a cool musician on the side, to where you're like, no, I'm a professional musician. I'm a professional accountant, and then I'm a professional musician. And you start posturing it that way, you move a lot differently. You start tracking expenses, like get some way to actually track your income and expenses and different things that you're doing. I don't care if you're doing it on the back of a paper, if you pull up an Excel, a Google sheet, you go Zoho book, whatever you feel comfortable doing, but you got to actually start moving like a business to where you have numbers and you can see what it is you're doing, see when the slow months were, see who owes you money and that kind of stuff, and move like an actual business. Like, don't send out these emails, send an actual invoice to people. You start sending people an invoice with an invoice number on it with some payment terms like due in 5 days. People are like, oh, okay, this is the real deal. Or when you tell people, I'm not lifting a stroke until I get my 50% deposit, and then you don't do it until you, and they're like, why isn't this done yet? I didn't get the deposit, bro. Like, I'll check the bank account. Everybody was there, you weren't there. I didn't see you. So you got bumped. You start moving like a business, you get treated differently. And then the last one is, once you figure out what it is you want to do, don't wait until you've gotten this perfect, you know, perfect product, this perfect service, whatever it is. Go out there and get that proof of concept. Get that first sale, get that second sale with the messy, janky version of what it is you're thinking about doing. To use the Pat Flynn, I'm reading the book, to use the Pat Flynn example, will it fly? Test it out. You know, will somebody pay you actual money for this thing that you say you want to do or sell or whatever it is? Does this actually make any sense? And you want to do this before you've invested, you know, all your hundreds of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of hours of time into it. Get the first sale, get that minimum viable product, as your friend Danielle, what's your last name? Of course, Danielle.
Leslie.
It was on the tip of my tongue. I was going to say Lewis. As Daniel Leslie would say, get that minimum viable product out there, test it out, and see if people will actually pay you real money for doing it. Get that proof of concept. And then finally, look, stop procrastinating and execute. I mean, you can sit down there mulling around ideas like me forever and ever thinking about different things, but you're not going to see that money come in until you go out there and execute. You know, that's the killer in the game. There's somebody out there making your money because they're actually executing. They don't have as much expertise as you. They're not as good as you. They don't have the idea as clear as you. They're out there asking for the sale. They're out there trying to make it happen. They're out there saying, will you buy this thing? I know it's not perfect yet. How much will you pay for it? This is the price. And when you get it better, I'll raise the price. When I get it better again, I'll raise the price. So go out there, stop procrastinating, and actually make it happen. Now, I want to leave folks with some practical ideas. So we shared one already, the copywriting. I mean, there's some things out there, and in this context, I'm thinking for now specifically about people who have quote-unquote office jobs or whatever it is. This stuff can work for a lot of people. I'll throw out a couple of different ideas. Podcast editor. You think it's very complicated. A lot of people who are podcasting, they are not that audio technically savvy and that kind of stuff. You'd be surprised. You can jump on something like Udemy or Skillshare and take a basic editing course for one of these softwares like Adobe Audition or GarageBand or whatever it is, and you'd be surprised how quickly you can edit up someone's podcast for them just with some basic skills. And you can make money for doing that, because the podcasters, as you know, there's a lot going on. You know, a lot of people want to just get rid of the editing and that kind of stuff. You could write the show notes. You could get paid just to listen back to somebody. You could get paid just to listen back to Money and Skills with Dallin and Michelle and just type up summaries of what was going on. Right? Talk to Michelle about that. But I'm just saying, podcasts about that out here. You can get paid for doing that kind of stuff, writing show notes and captions for Instagram and that kind of stuff. Because people who are building, a lot of times they have a lot of things going on. They don't have time to do all the kinds of stuff. Or maybe that's not their wheelhouse. That's not their expertise. You could do mobile phone photography. And I keep on mentioning this to people. I have one friend, Alton Bertie. Alton, I don't know if he does a lot of LinkedIn, but Alton Bertie made a career out of this. Professional trained musician, Berklee College of Music, all this stuff. Guy makes money with his iPhone. He started posting pictures. Now he gets paid to go to resorts and go to events and stuff and just be the iPhone photography guy. All the other guys out there with their DSLR, their mirrorless, their $6,000, he's just walking around snapping stuff. He's snapping stuff and editing it in Lightroom or Snapseed for free and making money. So think about it, somebody who's building a brand. For example, if they have a speaking engagement, maybe they don't have the money to have a full-on photographer follow them around. but they need that social media content. You know, imagine Gary Vee and D-Rock. Imagine if you were the fake D-Rock rocking around with somebody who's doing a speaking engagement and you're just snapping those candids for them. You're getting the little clips of them talking or whatever it is so that they can repurpose that into content. Somebody will pay you to do that. Somebody will pay you to proofread, just to read some stuff over for them, just so they get another set of eyes on it. And this stuff is out there, Fiverr, all these different places. Or you can do it yourself and just talk to people. If you're into making stuff, do your thing and drop it on Etsy. If you want to do a paid newsletter where you start getting your information up because you're the subject matter expert on it, right? You start putting out a newsletter, you put it out for free first and maybe people know about it. And then you have a paid version, right, of the newsletter, and people will pay $5 a month. They'll Netflix it, $10 a month. I mean, you get 500 people at $10 a month, you know, by the end of the year, you're making some serious money. That's a whole salary by the time you think about it. You could even cheat and do things where you say, okay, you want to make sure people are getting it out, you're getting it out there so people know. Maybe you say, I will give it to for free, but if you want it current, you got to pay. So the free version is coming out, but that's the one from 6 months ago. But if you want the hottest stuff that's coming out right now, like on the top of the bleeding edge or whatever they say, you got to pay for the subscription. Speaking engagements, voiceover artist. I mean, I've picked up people before to read things who they don't think they're professional voice artists, but I hear them talking. I'm like, hey, come here. We've done recordings in cars. Like, hey, come here. Hold the phone. I'm going to hold the phone. Read this into this microphone for me. Awesome. Great. Here's $50. Talk to you later. So those are just some of the general ideas I'll throw out. I mean, you can go down the laundry list, a whole bunch of stuff out there, but those are just things out there that you can do fairly you can do while still maintaining your main job. This is not something that necessarily going to like overtake all your time immediately. So those are some of the things that off the top of my head, I think people can start thinking about. So get out there, like Michelle is saying, become the subject matter expert in something, but also think very heavily about how you want to start monetizing those skills outside just your main client.
I've added, while you were sharing, I was adding to the comments, like what some of the points that Dallin was sharing, you'll see them in the comments if you're on Facebook and YouTube.
Beautiful.
And then I'm going to have show notes as well. But if you just want real time, I've put them in there for them.
And Michelle is rich, people. She has money to burn. Like, contact her and tell her you want to get paid to type up the show notes for her. I mean, you know she's got it. Like, run it. I'm just playing. I don't know. Don't do that. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe she's balling. I don't know. Whatever.
Okay. Next point.
I mean, that's all I got from my side for this stuff. I think there's just there's a combination here where more people who are sitting in offices need to, yes, leverage their intelligence for what they're doing in that office, but also realize that they can leverage that skill, that subject matter expert skill that they do, and a whole bunch of other skills that are in them, and get it monetized so they can start living life with more freedom where they're not dependent on that one paycheck. That'll be my takeaway for tonight. And like I said, if you want to learn a more detailed blueprint on this, go there, grab my book, No Boss, Only Clients. There's the back 40% of the book goes in more details about how you build the systems to do this. And then I'm also talking about this right now at my community over at dallinv.com. So drop over to dallinv.com/join. Drop in your first name and email, and you'll get more resources about how to make this money happen.
Fantastic. And I just want to really reiterate that if you're a SME, and most likely you are in some subject matter of something, you're a SME at something, right? Like, do you know, and some of you watching or listening could totally already know this. Do you know that there's a gentleman called I think he has a television show called The Laundry Guy, I believe, and it's strictly about laundering clothes. That's the whole premise of the show. And I think you can find him on social media, but he's a laundry SME. So it's if you want to get stains out of like family quilts, or you want to properly launder your shirt, or how to get it out, like he has a television show. He has a huge following. Like, there's a SME for everything. So my thing for you is, yes, invest in Dallin's book for sure, but also really think about what is it that you do, because you might be the engineer. Like, there's another, I think she's an urban farmer out of Atlanta. Her name is not coming to me, but she was an engineer for a long time. But what excited her, what made her, like, got her started up as far as, like, work that and made her feel like she's making a difference was urban farming. So she left her engineering job. Her name is not coming to me, but she left her engineering job and now she's an urban farmer. And she too has like a whole television show, and she teaches people how to turn their urban farm, their property or their home, like different pockets of land on their home where they have a lot or little in the Atlanta area. She has a show, I believe her show is on Discovery Plus. I think it's called Homegrown. Okay. But basically what she does is teach people how to have a garden. So she went from being an engineer to now she's teaching people gardening, and that is her superpower. So yeah. I say your SME, being what you are known for as a SME, is also your superpower. So what is that? Connect to that. Take all the triggers and insight and little nuggets of wisdom and connectors that Dallin and I shared with you tonight, and just really figure it out. And if you've been in your job for a while and you feel stagnant, this isn't just for someone who's just trying to figure out if they're a SME. This is also for someone that's been doing it a long time and they want to pivot. They want to find something else and they're not sure what that could be. And also, not necessarily find something else, but build on what you're already doing. What you're currently a SME for can take you to the next level, that is incorporated, that layering effect of your expertise and experience to what you're doing. So I want to hear from you. You can definitely message me and say, hey, Michelle, this is what I feel I'm a SME at or whatever. I want to know. I want to know what you do. I want to know what your trajectory and how you're figuring out your whole journey as a SME. So definitely DM me and I look forward to hearing from you.
Awesome. I'm excited about this. I think this is a topic that's near and dear to both of our hearts. I'm excited to see what people are going to do with all this information. If you want to talk about it, like Michelle said, shoot us a DM, do what you got to do. From my side over here in Panama, I'm excited for what y'all are going to build and create. Be sure to go out there and crush it this week. Stay profitable and have a powerful week. Love y'all. Let's get it.
Yes. Keep your skills recharged, competitive, and hire ready. Have a great week, everyone.